You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
That's right, my listeners. It's back again this season. And this year, I'll be mixing in some very special episodes because we're celebrating the top figures who have defined this incredible league over the past 20 years. Find out right here how these great teams and great players have become the kings of Europe. Stay tuned and download because, as you know, no subject is out of bounds on The Crossover. Welcome back once again to the 20th anniversary special edition of The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas as I sit here in downtown Madrid with a guy that I've been trying to find the right nickname for the last 4 years, but I just can't come up with it. He's calm, he's cool, he's smooth, he comes up in huge and huge games. And you know, it's like kind of going to a restaurant and having too many options, and you never know what to get. So I think I'm going to leave it up to him to either fill me in on what his nickname is or to help me get one here today. I'd like to welcome two-time EuroLeague champion to The Crossover, Corey Higgins. How you doing, my man?
I'm doing well. I'm happy to be here. Good to see you again. Thanks for having me.
You got it, man. It's good to be here. We got together last year. We'll talk about that a little bit right now. Mm-hmm. But tell me, nickname. Is it C. Higgs?
I heard that's
not good enough for you.
I don't know. Some people call me C. Higgs. I don't have many nicknames.
Nothing from the States?
Really, C. Higgs is the only nickname I've ever had, but
all right. I'll be doing the game tomorrow, so I'll throw out the C.
Higgs. Just keep it simple. Like, I'm a simple guy, so just keep it with C. Higgs.
You know, we're gonna have a problem understanding each other, right? Because I hear you like 100% West Coaster,
yeah,
and I'm upstate New York all day long, man. Yeah. I'm East Coast, so we'll try to figure it out. I spent when I played in Sacramento, I loved it because there's really nothing better than watching that Monday night football game at 6 o'clock in the evening. And then you still have dinner, go out, hang out. And East Coast, man, you watch that game and you got to go to bed. You barely make it.
Yeah, you don't get the perks of being a West Coaster. It's a more difficult life on the East Coast.
Yeah, but those 1:30, those 1 o'clock Sunday NFL games, you got to get up early for those, though.
Yeah, that's okay, though. We get to enjoy the rest of the day afterwards.
I usually don't do this, but we're sitting here taping this. It is going to come out a couple of weeks from now, but we're taping it the night before your first Clasico with Real Madrid Barcelona. You're coming off round 7 MVP, all right? 27 points against Zagreb. Congratulations on that. But does this game mean anything else to you, anything more to you, because it's Madrid-Barcelona, it's going to be your first one? Or because you just seem like that kind of guy that just every game is, you know, it's another game.
Yeah, I think you said it best. I try to approach every game the same. I think, every new place that I've been to, they always ask me, like, big games. I would ask, like, when I was Cheska, they would ask me the same thing about Final Fours. I just approach each game the same way. So I try to – for me, it doesn't really make a difference because my preparation is going to be the same. My approach is going to be the same. So for me,
both physical and mental?
Both physical and mental, yeah.
Are you superstitious? Do you like to go to bed the same time every night, all that stuff?
Not at all. I don't think any of that stuff matters. The only thing – I'm not superstitious about, but the only thing I put any energy into is my faith. And so as long as I have that, I don't really care about I don't think all that extra stuff really matters.
There you go. All right, forget all that other stuff. Let's talk about you and the 20th anniversary here. When did you start hooping? I mean, your dad played NBA. Obviously, Rod Higgins played NBA for many years. Mm-hmm. It's obviously in the blood. Was there any other sports? Because you look like a baseball player to me.
You got a good eye because
you always look like a baseball player.
Yeah, really, baseball was actually my best sport when I was playing. When I was younger, I played both baseball and soccer, and as well as basketball, of course. And I was really actually better at baseball and soccer, but basketball was just in my blood. There was really no other option. As you said, my dad played 13 years in the NBA, so just growing up.
Your brother played too, right?
My brother played. He's still in the business. He's a coach with Orlando Magic, so it's just a family business. And
what'd your mom do with all these athletes running around? Your mom must have been going crazy.
I know, taking us to practice,
exactly,
doing everything, but she's the reason why we're here. So.
Exactly. You're from Danville. Were you born there because your dad was playing? Is that when he was playing with Golden State?
Yeah, my my dad had just finished playing. He had moved to the bench as an assistant coach, so that's why I spent my early years in the Bay Area.
Oh, so he wasn't playing. You barely saw him play then.
He was playing maybe till maybe I was three or four. I don't really remember him playing, maybe a game or two. But he was coaching.
And then from there, he spent most time with you, or was he traveling? I mean, you were in Danville. I mean, He sounds like he's been everywhere.
Yeah, he was all over the place. So he had that rigorous schedule of NBA lifestyle and traveling all the time. But, we were always based in the Bay Area until middle school for me.
He's got one of the strangest records that I've seen. He played, four different teams in the same season? And from what I was looking at, and you correct me if I'm wrong, when I looked in Wikipedia, he also played in a CBA team that same year in Tampa Bay.
You might know better than me. I know. Really, I know about the record with him playing so many teams in one season. But
because I got Seattle, which is Northwest, mm-hmm. San Antonio, which is Southwest. You got New Jersey, which is Northeast. You got Chicago, which is Midwest. And then he went to Tampa, went South. He covered almost the whole map.
Yeah, he was all over the place. I don't really know how my mom did it that year. But I don't really remember much about that year.
You grew up with basketball and players. I'm sure when he was coaching, he probably brought you to practice a couple of times, whatever. So you grew up around a lot of different players, and we know your big story, your godfather is Michael Jordan, so I can't be any better than that. Mm-hmm. But I talked to Shane Larkin about about a year ago, six, 7 months ago in this crossover podcast, and he talked about his dad was a Hall of Fame baseball player, and he got to hang around with, like, you know, Tony Perez and Pete Rose and all those guys in the dugout. And it's what kind of made him that he was able to handle pressure, was able to handle things. Do you think that worked out for you? Because I see that you're just so smooth in big games, and like your character never changes no matter what's going on at any point of the game. Is that from being around these kind of people?
I think absolutely. I think that has a huge, huge part to do with it, because like how I grew up around the circles, the Hall of Famers and the best of the best, I feel like I've seen it all, so nothing really surprises me in the basketball world. So I think I think you said it best. Just being around the atmosphere, for me, it just seems like there's nothing I haven't seen. So it makes like the pressure moments and big games or whatever, it makes it easier for me in a sense.
Were you in all of these guys, like a lot of guys that you – I mean, give me a couple names that you like typically saw and hung out with.
I was never in awe because it was always normal to me. So
it's a little, but
obviously Michael Jordan, I'm really close with to this day with Chris Mullin and Mitch Richmond.
Mullin, that's my boy.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So, I mean, I've been blessed to just have just normal close friends as Hall of Famers. So it's kind of normal to me.
Tell Chris, he might remember me, man. I played at Niagara University when they were undefeated. We beat them. It was the first time we ever beat them.
Okay.
when he was at St. John's.
I'll mention next time I talk to him.
Did you feel pressure coming from that kind of family, coming from that kind of dad, like going through high school? You did well in high school. You got a nice scholarship to go to Colorado. Was there any pressure growing up to be better than you probably should have been?
The pressure was always there, I think, but that came from the outside, I think. For me, I never really felt it growing up under my father. I think it comes with a lot of things that people don't see, a lot of like you always have some type of stigma attached to you, or people always think that they know what you're about because what they see from the outside. But I think for me and the family I came from, they created almost a bubble for me to never mm-hmm. feel any pressure, and I think that was really beneficial.
Were you the youngest?
Yeah, I was the youngest.
So. Okay, right. Well, that helps too.
Yeah, that helps.
that bubble
brother.
Just helps being young, man, being the baby.
Yeah.
Especially for mom. I mean, being the baby, that's mom knowing that's the last one.
Yeah. Maybe my brother took the most of it.
You were recruited by Colorado, obviously went to Colorado. Was that your best option? You have other options to go to other places?
Why
did you go from the West Coast to...
I mean, it's not the West Coast, but it's close enough. It's like an hour and a half, 2 hour flight.
Yeah, but I mean, it's cold. I mean, weather-wise.
But I really didn't have any better options. I was highly overlooked And I take that same approach to today because I still feel like I'm overlooked and underrated.
We're going to get into that.
Well, yeah, I'm sure. But yeah, it started early. I didn't have any other options. I had small schools talking to me, and that was my best option. Thankfully, they gave me a shot.
You good freshman year. I mean, 8.3 points a game is a really good freshman mm-hmm. year back then. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Freshmen didn't just step in like they do nowadays. And then, you know, from that point on, you average like 19, 20 points a game. And that's a Big 12 conference. Mm-hmm. There's some good players in that conference. I can't remember what years you were there, Kevin Durant came out of that conference. Mm-hmm. A bunch of players came out of that conference. Third team all conference with those kind of numbers?
Yeah, like I said.
Yeah, that's where I'm going with this.
I feel like it was part of my identity ever since I was little, because I think it also comes with growing up, how I grew up underneath my father and underneath the company that he kept. Mm-hmm. I feel like people either expect you to be better than you are or overlook. A lot of times they just don't see you for what you can do. But I think that's helped shape me into the character that I have today. A huge chip on my shoulder, but it's a quiet chip.
Yeah. Yeah. It's mm-hmm. because I think if you had that chip on your shoulder and you were mad about it and you played angry, mm-hmm. you probably get more attention.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Like, you're not that spectacular player, but you get mm-hmm. everything done perfectly.
Yeah. I think the style has a lot to do with it too. I'm just a fundamental player. There's nothing spectacular about my game.
it sounds bad, but your game is spectacular because you got a great, you got a great shot from the outside. You get to the basket. When you get up and want to dunk on someone, you can dunk on somebody too. It's great. It's great. You've been overlooked a lot, unfortunately, but you're still working. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
My favorite question, Americans, is first of all, you graduated with a degree out of Colorado.
Yep.
My favorite question is always, what was that last game at Colorado like when you lost? I'm sure you probably lost in what, in the March Madness? Did y'all make the March Madness that year or in the
last
Big 12?
No, we actually were in the NIT and we lost in the semifinals. That was my last game.
You went all the way to the semis in the NIT?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Other than the disappointment of losing the semifinals in the NIT, it's your last game.
Yeah.
You might have had some... You might have had some back, some pillow to fall on with your dad in the league and so forth and so on, but most guys walk out of there and they don't know what their future holds. Like, you're ever going to put those shoes on again and play that game again at a high level. Was that going through your mind?
No. I knew I was going to keep playing. After the game, I think the only thing I really felt was that the college experience was over, and I think – That's what hit me most, just being with, because in college you form a lot of brothers that keep for life. So
that's family, man.
Exactly. So I think that was the only emotions that were going through my head. But at the same time, I knew my journey was just beginning.
You didn't get drafted. Is that disappointing?
Not at all.
No?
No.
Did you not expect that? Did you work out for any teams?
Yeah, I worked out for many teams, a bunch of teams.
Well, you did get drafted. You just got drafted by the NBDL, from what I see.
Yeah.
You got drafted by
it. Yeah.
Is Erie Bayhawks, is that Erie, Pennsylvania?
Yeah, it's Erie, Pennsylvania.
My ex-wife's family's from there.
Okay.
That's a place, man.
God bless them.
It's cold, too.
Yeah, it's cold. It's worse weather than Moscow.
way worse.
Yeah, it's
people don't. But I'm from upstate New York, which is just over a little bit more east, and it's the same thing. And I tell them, no, it's worse than Moscow. Yeah. And they're like, no, it can't be.
No, it is.
That storm comes off that river. Mm-hmm. Man,
it's rough out there. It's rough out there.
But you went to the Nuggets anyways, and you were waived on the 23rd of December, it says.
Mm-hmm.
Was that like, you didn't play any games with the Nuggets, so did you?
Just preseason. I was their last cut.
Okay. Oh, was that the
year? That was
a
lockout year.
A lockout year. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's what I.
Yeah.
Because I was cut by Sacramento on the 15th of December. You know that date?
Yeah, right before the guarantee.
Right before the guarantee contract. They called me up at like 11:30 at night and cut me. I was like, no. I was like, don't answer the phone. That's why when I saw December 23rd, I'm like, I said, if he played for him, he got the guarantee at least.
Yeah.
But it was the year of the lockout.
Yeah.
And then you went. Was it your dad working at Charlotte when you?
Yeah,
went
he was
there
working there. Yep.
Mm-hmm. How was that experience? You played what, 38 games? I saw
something like that. It was a rough experience because obviously it wasn't a great team, and it's being a rookie is as tough as it is trying to make it, but when you're on a bad team, it makes it much, much harder.
Right.
And, you know, you try to learn from vets, and because that's how you learn the game. There were some great guys on that team, but it was just a tough situation.
You went back and forth from Charlotte to Erie, like, a few times.
Yeah, twice.
Twice.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you couldn't have wanted to go back to Erie, right?
Yeah. Honestly, I didn't really care about when I got cut from Charlotte the second time. I just didn't want to go back to Erie.
Was there ever a time, and I already know the answer to this question, although I wrote it down before I'm sitting here talking to you. Was there ever a time where you felt like, God, this isn't worth it? I give it up, maybe get my degree going, get a job?
No. No, because I knew it was going to work out. And I think the biggest thing my father always told me, and I have this tattoo on me, is just enjoy the journey, because like nobody knows how your journey is going to go. You just have to enjoy the moments and just know that at the end you're going to come out where you want. And because there's going to be ups and downs the whole way, and you can't control most of it. So, you know, I knew it wasn't the end. I knew it was just the beginning. It was just part of the journey.
You're the perfect example of, like, when I speak to kids that are, you know, starting in this game or getting it, you know, even adults I speak to a lot, and I talk about, you know, the highs are never as high as you want them to be, or never as high as that you would expect them to be.
Mm-hmm.
And the lows can never be as low as they feel. You know what I mean? It's like you always have to somehow keep that mentally, keep that even keel. But it seems like you have that just, you know, it's already predetermined in your body. It's like you don't have to think about it. You just do it. I have to think about it.
Yeah.
I have a great day. I'm like, all right, settle down a little bit, because, you know, tomorrow might be a bad one. Let's keep it even keel.
Yeah, I think that was one of the great things that both my parents instilled in me. That goes along with my identity and the faith and everything. I think that's why you don't really see many facial expressions from the court. And I just try to keep it even keeled no matter what.
You ever get kicked out of a game?
No. I think I only have like two technicals in my career, maybe. It takes a lot. Even off the court, it takes really a lot to get me out of myself.
Well, man, that's crazy. Was Europe always an option for you? Was it something you thought about? I mean, you had to know a lot of players that probably came over here and played back and forth.
I mean, I was always open to everything. I just didn't know much about it.
You ever been to Europe before you came to Russia?
Yeah, Liberty was my first European experience.
What's that like on the plane? That's another question I love to ask Americans. I mean, plus on top of it, you're West Coast. Mm-hmm. Which is further away.
Mm-hmm.
You're American. You're going to Russia.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say that we're ignorant, but, you know, Americans are a little bit ignorant about where we're going.
We are.
You know, when we leave America.
Yeah.
What are you thinking on the plane? You're like, man, what is waiting for me over here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you said it best. A lot of Americans are ignorant, and even I try to pride myself as being open-minded as possible, but I still didn't realize or had no clue what life was going to be like. I was definitely looking forward to it. The best way to describe it is just complete culture shock, and just you have to relearn a lot of things, because just when you're in America all the time, you think that everything goes a certain way.
Right.
And then you learn.
Like,
yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it took a little bit of adjustment, but I was always looking forward to it, and then I wasn't scared of coming over here.
Yeah, I think that's the hardest thing for Americans to come over, because my agent told me when I was a kid first coming over, he said, look, I was nervous, man. I didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
And he told me, he's like, look, he said, this is pretty basic. You put the orange ball in the orange rim. That's all you need to do, no matter where you go in this world.
That was the only thing consistent.
Yeah, that's the only thing that you need to worry about. It's like everything else is going to take care of itself, but you just put the ball in the basket. You know, that was back when we didn't have to defend, man. Americans didn't have to defend back then.
Put the ball in the basket.
Yeah, if we shut somebody down and we only score 4 points, we got cut.
Yeah.
That's why I got the reputation for never defending. I was like, if I defended, I wouldn't have been in Europe anymore, man. They would have kicked me out. But that was your best years. Not your best year. You've had great years, but statistically, point-wise, you should average 20 a game.
Well, honestly, it was probably because they actually told me I didn't have to defend. That was the only year I really didn't have to defend. I put all my energy. They told me they wanted me to come over there and score baskets. So,
got it. I mean, you're still waiting for that again, aren't you?
Yeah, but I had to. But it was good to get my name out there. But at the same time, like my next stop at Gaziantep and playing for a completely different style coach, I think that combination is what made me into the player that I am today. Because when I went to Gaziantep, he was really on me about defense, and so now I think I've shown that I'm a great defender as well. So it all came together.
How do you get from these places as excuse me for saying this, you're far enough away, as a virtual unknown out here, and you sign with Cheska out of nowhere. I think Coach Atudis is a good friend of mine, and I respect him immensely. He's got a great eye for talent because, he brought you in. He's brought some people in that he's taken a risk on, even Will, unfortunately hurt. I hope he gets better and comes back strong. But he's taken a risk on guys like you. Where did he get you from? Was he in Turkey coaching? Didn't he spend a year in Turkey coaching? Was he there when you
did.
Were there?
I think it was a combination of things because my first year was in Russia, so Cesca had already been exposed to me a little bit. And then I went to Turkey, and he wasn't in Turkey that year. He was actually with Cheska that year.
Okay.
And I don't know. I guess I got a great agent. I don't know. I got kind of lucky, but I don't believe I should have been in Gaziantep following my first year anyway. But
you thought you should have went bigger?
Yeah, I think that was not. Yeah.
Was that your agent's fault?
That was a different agent.
Oh, that was
I won't
a different
say yeah. It's that's somebody who I'm not with anyway.
we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, then. Yeah, exactly.
Don't send Corey to some small town in Turkey, right?
Yeah, I mean, but it all worked out perfectly. But I don't know. I mean, I guess that was God's plan to put me there, and thankfully Coach Atudis, he took a risk on me. I think I remember he called me that summer, and I think he was just all about character guys and high character guys. Obviously he's very confident in the way he can coach, and so I think he just saw a person that had good character and that he could coach him into the player that he thought he could be for that team.
Do you personally feel like he took a risk on you?
Me personally, no. I never felt like, yeah, of course not. I never felt like, I always felt I should be playing. After my first year over here, I knew I should be playing at the highest level in Europe.
It's hard to get there, though, without mm-hmm. you never played, I'm going to get into this now, but you never played a Euro Cup game.
Yeah.
You never, I mean, your first Euro game was with Cheska Moscow. You're like, that doesn't happen.
That doesn't happen very often.
Because even Will, I think Will was with Dardo Shafaka for a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And before he went to Cheska.
Yep.
And I don't even, but he wasn't in the Euro League yet. I think they were still in the Euro Cup when he won it, maybe.
I'm not sure, but I know he spent 1 year at least in Euro League. Will did.
But I mean, you had no experience whatsoever because when you were at the Russian team, I can't remember.
Euro Challenge. Is that still going? Euro Challenge.
I don't even know. Mm-hmm. You got me. I should probably know that more than you.
Like I said, I that was really God's plan because that the acceleration to the top of European basketball was really rapid, and that you don't really see that often. So I'm really fortunate and blessed to have
you are fortunate.
That path.
But,
mm-hmm.
but you know what? There's another thing I talk with kids about is the first thing you have to do is recognize the opportunity. Mm-hmm. And the next thing you have to do is seize that moment and take advantage of the opportunity. And you've done that from day one. You were the only, when you came in and we're in 2015-16, now you were the only signing that year, if I'm not mistaken, right? You were the only new guy on the team.
More or less, yeah. Maybe Nikita came that year, Cubano.
Yeah, but he doesn't really count. I mean,
he's been there.
Yeah, he's been back and forth from there his whole life,
Exactly. But yeah, I
mean, he does count. No, Nikita, don't get mad at me, but he does count. But yeah, I think you were like the only real change that they made. And they went from losing the Final Four to the next year. You guys, I mean, you played great throughout the season. 9-1 the regular season, 10-4 in the group. You guys, Savannah, I'm probably telling you stuff you don't remember, but I had to look it up. That's my job. You guys beat Savannah Vesden in the playoff to get to the Final Four. Mm-hmm. And again, you never played in a European game or a Euro Cup game. What's that like for you, man? I'm expecting you to tell me like, oh man, this is just unbelievable, but you're just, it's just you.
Yeah, it's like you said, it's at the end of the day, it's still the same. Put the orange ball in the orange basket.
My agent said that. I had a good agent too, okay. Man. He lied to a lot of people about me. My first job was in Italy. He told me I was 7 foot. They almost put me back on the plane and sent me home.
That's what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
But I think I just fit well with that team because, I feel like I can do a lot of different things. And I came in, I knew I was going to be a role player. I knew there was a lot of big names on that team. So I just had to find minutes where do things that other players or something that I could provide that other players weren't. So whatever the team needed. And I think in that season, it was more particularly a defensive role and providing a spark. So that's one of the things I pride myself on, just try to provide what the team needs no matter what.
You guys beat Loco in the semis that year and played Fenner in the final, which I thought was one of the greatest games, I've ever seen. I did the crossover here with Ali Muhammad, mm-hmm. Bobby Dixon, a little while ago, and he didn't really think that was one of the best games he ever been
I'm
in
sure
either.
He didn't.
But I think it might be for you, right?
Yeah, that was amazing. I have a lot of memories from that game.
We talked about the Demons last year at Cheska. Mm-hmm. Y'all were up 20. And that last possession was probably the worst possession I've ever seen in a pressure situation. And then your boy Victor just bails the team out with a tap. I when I said that to Bobby Dixon the other day, man, he just kind of looked at me like this, like, not like you're looking at me right now. Yeah. He looked at me like he wanted to come across and punch me. He's like, I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah. Captain Vic, he saved the day for us, saved the season for us. Yeah, but I remember hearing about those Demons all the time from my first year. All the way up until we won it again last year. There was always there was always some kind of Demons.
What's it like to win that thing, man? It's your first year. I mean, first of all, no one shows up and just plays Euro League the way you did. Mm-hmm. And second of all, not too many people have the chance to be in the Final Four. And then third of all, you got to go through that Final Four and win it. Mm-hmm. Were you just? Your faith has to be at that point. You talk about your faith. You know, you got to be giving thanks.
Yeah, for sure. But at the same time, I wasn't really shocked or I wasn't that. I didn't have that huge of a shock value for me because I expect things to just work out.
How can you not be? You're happy, but you're not shocked. Did you have this result in your mind already? Have you already imagined the victory? You've been through it. It's kind of like a foul shot. You've mm-hmm. been through it a million times.
Yeah. To be honest, I think once, because I heard so much about the semifinal Demons of Cesca, and when we got past Loco, I truly felt that that we were going to win the game. And even when I had no feelings that we were going to lose that game, no, even when Fenner was coming back, even when we were down by two. And I never felt like we were going to lose that game at any point.
That's great. I don't know how you can't. I don't know how that can't go through your mind. I tend to believe you're lying to me, but I got no other choice but to believe. And the thing, I'm not going to ask you so much about the after party because I don't want to get into that. I don't think you don't sound like a big party yourself, anyways. But all I want to talk about is your boy Kyle Hines because this was the first year I texted him to know where the after party was. He didn't answer my text, man.
Kyle was probably too exhausted.
Come on, man. He could just throw me a text and say, we're at this place or this place.
He could have, because that after party, that was for sure the best one. That was better than the one in Victoria. Yeah, the one in Berlin was.
Yeah, the one in Berlin had to be fun.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go any further into that. Being what we talk about, being a newbie, a rookie, whatever you want to call yourself in the EuroLeague that year, how important was it? I know you had a great team. You had a great support system with you. But how important is it to have a guy like Kyle Hines, man, on a team like that? Because, he's just I don't even call him a basketball player. He's just the man.
He's a great person, great
player, great everything.
There's literally nothing bad you can say about
Kyle. Did he just
kind of
take you under his wing?
He does.
Did you go over alone your first time?
Yeah, I was there by myself my first year.
He's got wife and kids, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure if his wife was there that year. But anyway, I mean, Kyle, yeah, he's amazing. He's not he's a lot like me in the sense that he doesn't talk a lot. He just speaks with huge volumes with his actions. He tells you what you need to be told, and he keeps it simple. I think that's why he's such a great leader, and I think that's why he was such a great captain as well. Like, one of the things he always said, like, there's 15 captains in the room. Like, he never felt like he had to be the leader by himself. He liked to share the responsibility, and I think when you see that from your leader, you gain even more respect from that person. But I mean, I could talk about Kyle forever, but he's
I mean, he's just I'm the same way. I heard you leave an interview in Moscow with him. Mm-hmm. You guys were at some party or something. I don't know.
And
you,
Closing party. Mm-hmm.
Closing party. You guys did some kind of interview. And he mentioned something about an unsportsmanlike foul waiting for you.
Yeah. He did say that.
You think he's got one for you?
I mean, I know he's probably going to be a little extra physical. He knows he has some tricks to try to guard me. I know he's going to push me on those screener rolls.
Him and I did the rerun of the game, the final game last year, mm-hmm. where he was in his house in Moscow and I was in my house in Madrid, and we were watching on TV. And you remember that on Sportsman, like, he got on Shane?
Yeah.
He's kind of mm-hmm. wrapped him around.
Yeah.
I could see him maybe doing the same thing, like, you know, that was an accident. I didn't mean that.
I mean, I wouldn't put it past him. That's for sure. Kyle, he'll do anything to win. So
that's good. I wouldn't want to get wrapped in his big arms, man. The next year, the format changes, and it turns into the round robin. You know, this is this EuroLeague evolution of change. Did you like the new format? I mean, I love it, being able to play everybody.
Yeah, the new format was great. I think it was very good for European basketball. I mean, you want to see the best teams play the best teams, and it was a shame that sometimes that wouldn't happen. Like, mm-hmm. for instance, we didn't play Fenner until the championship game.
You didn't play Fenner that year. I didn't even realize that. Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
Yeah, so I think it's just great for basketball. Great.
That's
for
when there was the two groups of, mm-hmm. of 10. Okay, yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, so you didn't play them in the regular season, and they were in the other group.
Exactly. We didn't see them until the Final Four.
Sometimes that's good, though, too.
Yes and no. But
it wasn't the first half.
Yeah, exactly. In the second half, not so much. But as a competitor, you want to play everybody. So I think the new format is obviously much better.
This is the fourth season with the new format, but one thing that hasn't changed in the 20 years of EuroLeague's existence now is repeating, and is almost impossible. You had Maccabi do it in 2004, 2005. Olympiacos do it in 2012, 2013. I'm assuming you're hoping that it won't be Cheska's time to do it this year, right?
Yeah, now unfortunately it can be.
But you know what's funny, man? Like, when I was doing my research on you, every time I looked in the EuroLeague page, I pulled up Cheska first, man. To me, it's Cheska, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people see it that way. But, I mean, I think I'm building something special here, so people will change. They'll see me as Barca.
The Demons came back to haunt you that year.
Yes, they did.
Against Olympiacos.
Yes, they did.
They held you guys to 14 points in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. And as an announcer, man, when I'm doing those games, you can almost feel it coming in, you mm-hmm. know. And I know you guys can't feel it on the court, but at some point or another, it's got to go through your head. And I know what you're going to tell me.
But. Yeah. I don't believe, I don't believe in all that stuff. But, I mean, after the game, when you lose, it really sucks that you have to hear about it even more. You mm-hmm. hear about it before the game, and then you give them the right to talk about it even more. So it just sucks seeing people or think that they were proven right, in a sense.
Did you watch the final game? The following year, you lost the game.
Yeah, when you lose, unfortunately, I lost two of them. Like, you don't watch the final game. At least me personally, my interest is gone. Yeah.
You did the same thing that I did. I won my first EuroLeague Final Four, and I lost the second one. No one really imagines no one really knows the amount of time, energy, sweat, blood, tears that you've put in mm-hmm. to get all the way there and lose that game. I mean, especially when you've already won one. You know what I mean? When you've mm-hmm. won one, you're like, okay, well, I already got one. You always got that little pillow, you know, behind mm-hmm. you. But it just hurts, man, to get that far. You haven't lost in the final yet. You got that going for you.
Yeah.
Not having that feeling, is it better to lose in the semifinal or lose in the final?
For sure the final.
Just to get there, right?
Yeah, you got to get there. But losing in the semifinal, it's heartbreaking for sure. It's tough to get over. Like you said, the whole year up to one game, it's hard to leave everything up to one game, but that's the format. There's no really words besides
it's the most
sucks.
Exciting part about the format too, though, that you know, you have to be at your best at that one game.
Yeah.
The following year, you guys have a pretty dominant year also, and Žalgiris and Real Madrid show up as 5th and 6th seeds, which is not a normal thing, but it's been happening a lot more lately in the EuroLeague, but they get in, but you guys ran into Madrid that was injured all year long and shows up with everybody like
clicking healthy
like
just at
October.
The right time.
I mean, what was that something? I mean, I know it's something you don't have in your mind when you're practicing thinking about it, but I mean, that has to make it difficult. They just got there at the right time, and that's what the Final Four is all about.
Yeah, I think just winning the Final Four in general, you have to, there's a lot of luck that goes into it. It's not just hard work. You can't control everything. So that year we were kind of unfortunate. We had a lot of injuries. Playoff series, we didn't have Kyle, we didn't have Nando, and those guys came back with maybe one or two weeks before the Final Four, and they only had like one or two games playing against our domestic league opponents, which are good games, but it's not going to be the same level that they're used to. It's not going to be the same intensity that's going to be in the Final Four. So, and those are two main guys that we had to have playing in our rotation, obviously. So I think we were kind of unlucky that year with injuries in Madrid. It was very fortunate for them that they got healthy and were clicking at the right time.
You're going to end up thanking me for this, but we're just going to jump right ahead to last year.
Okay.
All right, we're done talking about the two passes. I know it's late for you, and you're going out of your way to be here with us at the crossover, so I want to get you to bed soon. I love this season because we talked about this last year, and I talked about all year long. I said you guys were flying under the radar all year long. You still ended up in second place in the league. I think you guys were 24-6.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but you had some really, like, you had some bad losses, mm-hmm. strange losses along the mm-hmm. way. Budenas, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the kind of losses that would make people think that this just ain't their year. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. they finally won it. They've lost two in a row. And this season isn't their season. Even mm-hmm. your typical 3-1 playoff win that you guys seem to have all the time against Baskonia was mm-hmm. a struggle, man, because mm-hmm. you guys lost that second game. And I did both mm-hmm. games in Victoria, man. And in game three, y'all were
down
about
like double
30,
digits
45 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
You're down for about 45 seconds with about 2.5 minutes to go where you just took the game over. But for that whole game, you guys were down. It wasn't your season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you said it best. We had some terrible losses, but I think that season it really built our character because after all those losses, we knew people were going to be talking even louder. There was a lot of doubters for sure about that team, and I think we fed off that though. You know, everybody always wants to see Cheska lose anyway.
You've personally been feeding off of doubters for years.
Yeah, you know, exactly. I think it just adds fuel to the fire, and it's better. It makes the locker room tighter. It makes the bond with your brothers even more because that's all you're gonna have is whoever's in that locker room. That's everybody that's gonna believe in you. So I think it was a perfect storm for us. We had to go through some horrible moments, but I think it built us right up for the right time, and that was the most confident I think in all four Final Fours that I've been to. That was the most confident I think we were as a team going into it.
Was it beneficial that you guys played Baskonia in the same court that the Final Four was going to be played in those two very very intense playoff games? Was it? I mean, did it help you guys mentally that you went in on that court and you had some really good games and you had to fight your way to get to that final?
Yeah, it definitely helped us. There was some comfort there. I think we even tried to get the same locker room, but it didn't happen. But I think even more, it was – the more beneficial the battles that they put us through and the adversity they put us through, because there was nothing easy about that playoff series. Mm-hmm. And
that helped you guys.
Exactly. That helped us.
I thought I saw you guys building character in those two games.
For sure. And there was nothing, especially the two road games going into that third game when it was 1-1. If we lose that game, then it's who knows how it's going to go.
Backs up against the wall then, especially exactly. in that gym.
Exactly. It's tough in that gym. But, yeah, it built us great character. We got great character from that, and we just used it as fuel going into the Final Four.
And I told Coach Itudis this after the game. I just said, this is the best game I've ever seen you coach in the semifinal game against Madrid. It's the best game I've ever seen him coach. He changed things offensively, made Madrid change. You guys were down 11 at one point in that third quarter, And I think, again, going back to those two Baskonia games, I think that's where you guys had it, just that extra push in that third and fourth quarter. You just chipped away at that lead. You didn't go like on no 13-0 run or anything like crazy like that. You just chipped away at it.
Exactly. That's where those games in Baskonia paid dividends for us, because we had already been in those moments where we've been down 10, 12 in crucial moments, and we knew we had to start chipping away. And I think we were comfortable in that moment, and so we just started chipping away, and we were confident that we could get the job done.
And the final game, Memphis, is what I told you I went over with Kyle. That was a lot of fun. We spent like 2.5 hours just talking about it. Mm-hmm. And you know, when I'm commentating a game and when you're playing a game, there's a lot of things you don't remember. You know, mm-hmm. It was like a boxing match, man. It was like every time they like threw like a couple hooks, a couple punches, you guys came right back at them, threw a couple punches. They came into within like 3-4 points, 2 points, and boom, and you guys went back up 6 or 7. Mm-hmm. That was really a great game when you go back and watch. Did you ever go back and watch it again?
I never rewatched it.
You need to, man. Because not now. You're with Barcelona, not that matter. But you need to get over that, I guess. Yeah. But it was a great game. And we talked about that boxing match, man. Did you feel that as you're going? Like, damn, they're making another run. Let's go get them.
Honestly, like I said, like when we got to that final game, there was no doubt in my mind that we were winning that game. Like, I felt like we controlled the game the whole.
They had that momentum.
Yeah, they did, and they were hot. But I think you could just tell in the way we played, the way we came out. Like, that's something that you learn about your teammates and how – the way your teammates play and how your team looks, like you can see, like when everybody's locked in and everybody's on the same page, that maybe some outsiders can't see, and we were all locked in on every single play. So we knew they were going to make their runs, but we knew if we played our basketball, there wasn't a way that they could beat us.
So you already told me that the party wasn't the same afterwards in Baskonia as it was in Victoria, as it was in Berlin, but. You know, a lot of times that you mentioned you have a tattoo on about the journey, you know, and you talk a lot about the journey. Isn't achieving something even that much sweeter and better when, like, the journey's been a tough road? You know what I mean? Instead of something just given to you?
For sure. It makes it much, much sweeter because, I mean, adversity makes everything sweeter because you have a bigger sense of accomplishment. And like you had to go from losing two Final Fours in between in the rough and rocky road through the whole season. So
which one's better then? That first one or?
Yeah, I just said the party was better, but the second one was definitely better for sure.
No, because that was a fight for you.
You had to fight for that. You had to earn that.
You had a little bit more respect for that. Championship cup than you did the year before.
Exactly. When you can't get back and then you finally get there again, it tastes a little sweeter.
I hope our boy listens to this because, you know, I'm not going to tell you his name this time, but you know he didn't answer my text again that night.
Hey, you got to take that up with him. He answers my text, so.
Well, of course, you were in the locker room with him, man. I was sending him texts. I'm like, Kyle, where y'all at, man? And that was my city. I played there for 3 years. So I mean, no matter where you went, I knew I was going to go.
Yeah. You didn't miss anything. That's okay.
Personal part, real quick. I got to get you out of here. Everything we talk about this interview is essentially about your journey. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been a journey for you. How can you sum up that journey from Danville to Moscow and now to Barcelona? You just seem so smooth about everything. It drives me crazy. I wish I had that ability, man, to do that.
It's hard. It's hard to put in words, especially if you go all the way back from Danville. I feel like there's been chapters in my life's journey. A new chapter started when I came overseas. A new chapter was with Cesca, and now I have a new chapter with Barcelona. And so, you know, this whole interview was mostly about Cesca.
That's because that's the only Final Four you've been in
exactly,
so far.
Exactly.
Wait till next year.
Exactly. So hopefully next year. I'm very excited starting my journey here in Barca and starting a new journey and creating more memories here. I think the time in Cesca was perfect to close after last year. It was the perfect time to close that chapter and begin this one.
I'm never surprised to hear that basketball players like video games. But I was surprised to hear that you're not into Fortnite and all that other stuff. You're just into FIFA.
Only
from
FIFA.
From what I understand.
Only
FIFA. Because you're a soccer fan, that's it.
Yeah, I am, man.
It's only FIFA. Like,
everybody that knows me knows that I'm probably the best FIFA player. But unfortunately,
You know who plays that a lot is Chad Johnson.
Okay.
Ocho Cinco, yeah.
Yeah. I can't accept challenges now, though. I'm a little rusty because I have a daughter now.
So you have a daughter now.
Yeah.
I didn't even see that.
Yeah.
You got a dog, too.
Yeah, my dog. Momo, named after Moscow. His name is Moscow. It's Momo for short. I got him my first year in Moscow.
Mm-hmm. And the last thing is, I'm going up to Russia in January, and I heard you and your wife just know every spot to go to eat. You guys are like foodies.
Yeah, we're big foodies, for sure.
You're going to give me some?
Hey, I won't be like Kyle. I'll answer you.
I need some places in Barcelona, too, now that you're there.
I'm still working on it. My expertise isn't quite there yet. But
do me a favor, though. You know I haven't played this game. I've been retired for like 20-something years, so I need to. I'm on a different salary than you. I'm a different, I'm a EuroLeague pay scale. You know what I mean? Send me to like a Groupon restaurant or one of those things.
I'll keep that in mind for sure.
Corey, once again, I can't thank you enough for taking the time for being here. My listeners and the crossover, you're a great example for young players trying to make it, and I'm going to let you in on a little secret. All right. Mm-hmm. We talked about how difficult it is for a team to repeat in the EuroLeague, but we didn't mention that you personally can repeat.
Oh, yeah, there can be personal repeats. So.
There you go. So good luck this year. It won't be as difficult for you.
Exactly. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.